In 1896, a Texas railway man went before the board members of his company and proposed a grand event. William Crush proposed the company take two retired locomotives and intentionally set them on course for a head-on collision. It sounds preposterous, but staged train wrecks were becoming all the rage. They had gone well in other states, but this one went horribly wrong. This is the story of the crash at Crush, Texas. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight, and I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine, all right. Oh.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring historical mysteries and legendary figures of the American South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. The idea of planning and publicizing a train accident seems ridiculous to us now, but in the late 19th century, organized train wrecks were common entertainment and occasionally used as publicity stunts to promote towns and products. Staged collisions started in the late 1800s and continued well into the early 1900s. Trains were staged to travel down tracks from opposing directions, with engineers jumping from them to their safety before the trains intentionally crashed. These spectacles drew massive audiences at state fairs. Joseph Connolly from Iowa would become known as Head-On Joe, staging more than 40 train wrecks at state fairs and nationwide events between 1896 and 1932. Amazingly, not a single one of these violent wrecks involved injuries. It's because Connolly was inspired by other successful train wrecks, like the one organized by a railroad man named A.L. Streeter. He bought into the idea of staging an accident as a publicity stunt for a new park that he was set to help open, called Buckeye Park, near Lancaster, Ohio. Streeter felt the average American had never seen a train accident and was convinced they would be entertained by watching two locomotives crash at high speed. He arranged what's believed to be one of the first successful intentional train wrecks in the nation on May 30th, 1896. The stunt brought in the crowds organizers had hoped for. The plan was to charge the crowd admission to the crash, but allow free admission to the park. An estimated 20,000 spectators were on hand and watched as two 45-ton freight engines that had become too expensive to maintain long-term were sacrificed. They headed down the tracks of the Columbus, Hocking Valley, and Toledo Railway toward the organizers' goal. Two engines, each towing three empty coal cars and a caboose, ramming together at a combined speed of 100 miles per hour. It all went to plan, with a Columbus newspaper reporting this sensational event in this way. Quicker than thought, there was a crash, a fearful moan, the hissing and screeching of escaping steam, the rattle and bang of falling iron and steel, flying pieces of debris, a lasting, terrible sigh of the dying iron steeds, a settling of the mass of ruins, and all was over. The crowd went wild, and the event was a success. Countless excited spectators approached the crash site and took home pieces of the wreckage as tokens, a reminder of what they had witnessed. William Crush was one of the many railroad men who paid attention to what had happened in Ohio. Crush began his career with the railroad in 1890 in the auditor's office of the Chicago, Indianapolis, and Louisville. By 1893, he joined the Missouri-Kansas-Texas Railroad, known as the Katy Line, as a general passenger agent in Denison. By 1895, he was transferred to Dallas, where he began working as a marketing agent. In the 1890s, entertainment options for the 2 million settlers in Texas were few and far between. There were farmers groups for men who wanted to network and socialize. Women could take part in the Christian Temperance Union. And there was college football, with its first game being played in 1894. By 1896, the country was in the midst of an economic downturn. People weren't as excited to spend money on $2 round-trip tickets to ride the Katy Line, without a big event to motivate them to take the train. Folks were finding it hard to get jobs, and they were holding on to the money they were able to make. Businesses were worried as they saw companies file for bankruptcy nationwide. The Katy Line had more than $1 million in passenger sales and $3 million in freight earnings in 1895, but the board was worried about the future of the railway and maintaining sales and growth. Which is why William Crush was always working on the next event or special excursion to encourage people to buy tickets to ride the Katy Line, which ran through Waco and West Texas. He needed something that would attract mass crowds, entice them to spend their money. Through the 1890s, the Katy Line began replacing 30-ton steam engines with modern 60-ton engines. Dozens of trains were just sitting there, not in operation. And Crush brainstormed ways the Katy Line could make money off of those unused trains. Some of them had been sold to logging operations, while others were being scrapped. Crush proposed a train wreck to publicize the Katy. The smashing of two trains had worked so well in other states. But the crash at Crush, as it's known, would leave several spectators severely injured and kill three. It was one of the deadliest publicity stunts in American history. William Crush knew the public was fascinated by these staged train wrecks. Crush was known as an expert event planner and planned for just about every aspect of the crash. The Katy Line accepted his proposal and offered three obsolete locomotives for the crash, two for the day of the event, and one as a backup in case there were any issues. Rail officials agreed the railroad would profit from train tickets for passengers to get to the site of the wreck, and admission to the event would be free. The spot Crush chose for the wreck was 15 miles north of Waco, Texas, in McLennan County. The location, near one of the main lines for the railroad, was a natural amphitheater thanks to its position in a shallow valley with hills on three sides. The event was scheduled for September 15th, 1896. And Crush knew how to create excitement and throughout the summer worked to put his plan together. He organized a promotional tour through North Texas with stops in Waco, Denison, and several towns along the Katy Railway. Crush wanted people to see the engines at each stop and in turn help sell those $2 round-trip tickets to see the big crash. Locomotive number 999 was painted green with red trim. Number 1001 was painted red with green trim. All along the tour, posters were up and ads were printed in newspapers in railroad towns throughout the country. People came by the thousands to see the trains on the tour, which led Crush to estimate that the crowd on the day of the wreck could surpass 20,000. Crush connected with an old friend, one of the greatest showmen of all time, P.T. Barnum, who advised Crush to treat the crash as though it was a carnival. The Katy Line built a railway station at the crash site and named that station Crush, Texas, in honor of the man behind the plan. A four-mile sidetrack was built for the event, and a grandstand was constructed for VIPs, including politicians and celebrities of the day, who were excited to come and watch the crash at Crush. Following Barnum's advice, a large tent from Ringling Brothers Circus was set up for concessions, and a midway was set up for carnival games and popular medicine shows. The location and the schedule for the event was all settled, but Crush ran into some issues. Like finding engineers and a crew willing to conduct these trains for the wreck. In fact, every engineer approached to take part when Crush initially proposed this idea to his bosses said no. They were concerned the train's boilers would burst upon impact. They said it shouldn't be done. The wreck only went forward because one engineer said yes, and the railway board felt that was enough. On the day of the crash, it's estimated that between 30 to 40,000 people came to Crush, Texas. We don't know the exact numbers because some people rode buggies to Crush or walked, but a majority did come by way of the 33 trains the Katy Railway used to transport spectators to the temporary rail station. The crowd was so large on September 15, 1896, that for just a few hours, Crush, Texas was the second largest town in the state. Now, as each train pulled into the station and crowds gathered and explored the carnival tent and midway, the locomotive crews were busy working to ensure safety. They checked the locomotives for any issues that could lead to mechanical failure. Firemen were on hand to evaluate both of the 35-ton engines used for this wreck. Speed tests were conducted to mark the exact point the trains would collide. Katy Railway staff and engineers had made modifications to the engines on both locomotives to prevent an explosion. Steam engines used boilers, heavy metal pressure tanks that contained water that was heated to the boiling point by fire, fueled by wood or oil, sometimes coal. When the water reached boiling point, it turned to steam, which caused a powerful expansion of pressure inside that boiler, which was transferred through pipes to the cylinders and pistons that were connected to the engine's wheels, moved those pistons, and powered the locomotives forward. The locomotive crew's biggest fear was a rupture of the boiler under pressure of the stage wreck, which would cause an explosion that's been compared to the force of a bomb. This had caused train accidents in the past that had led to loss of life. With William Crush promoting the crash at Crush as a safe event for the whole family, the locomotive crew made every effort to ensure they ran through all potential problems. Crush had also been particular with the crew members chosen for each of those locomotives. He had to be sure they were agile and able to jump away from the trains once they hit full throttle and race down that track. Katy's engineers and the crew met with Crush, delivered the news that the engine boilers were ready. They had been modified to resist ruptures at high speed. They assured William Crush they would not explode. As an extra precaution and to ensure the safety of spectators, Crush set up a viewing area for the crowd that started 100 yards back from the track on the day of the event. The event had been scheduled to begin at 4 p.m., but with a large crowd and Crush insisting on last-minute safety checks to ensure nothing went wrong, the event was delayed until 5 p.m. At that time, locomotive number 999 and number 1001 were staged at the predicted collision point, with boxcars that were strung behind each locomotive and chained together for safety. Brightly painted with ads for Ringling Brothers Circus and the old Oriental Hotel in Dallas. Photos were taken at the expected collision point, which William Crush had planned when he promoted the crash as the Duel of the Iron Monsters. This meeting on the tracks was essentially a gentleman's handshake before the monsters began to back up to their starting location on the track. William Crush was positioned on the back of a white horse. He gave the start signal by waving his hat. At that moment, the locomotive crews pushed the throttles to full force and the trains raced down the track toward each other. Engineers made their instructed jumps to safety, and within 2 minutes, The trains were each powering forward at about 45 miles per hour. A reporter from the Dallas Morning News described the scene. The rumble of the two trains, faint and far off at first, but growing nearer and more distinct with each fleeting second, was like the gathering force of a cyclone. Nearer and nearer they came, the whistles of each blowing repeatedly and the torpedoes which had been placed on the track exploding in almost a continuous round like the rattle of musketry. Locomotive 999 and 1001 hit near the very spot they were expected to collide. The two locomotives struck at a combined speed of 90 miles per hour. Upon impact, the front of the trains were lifted off the tracks. But seconds later, the fear of many engineers who had said no to doing this became a reality. The boilers on both locomotives exploded, essentially creating a bomb. The Dallas Morning News reporter who had witnessed the catastrophic event wrote, "The air was filled with flying missiles of iron and steel, varying in size from a postage stamp to half of a driving wheel." The crowd was horrified as deadly pieces of hot iron and steel flew in all directions, flew directly into that crowd that moments before had been cheering the moment of collision. Thousands began running for their lives. Official event photographer Jarvis Dean was standing in a media section about 100 feet from the track when the explosion sent a bolt flying through the air. That bolt hit Dean, ripping out his right eye. Some of the photos that serve as historical record of the day were taken by Dean, who survived but was in a coma for months. Witnesses watched in horror, describing the scene as a battlefield, with the injured on the ground crying out in pain and in shock. Dozens were injured with wounds ranging from shrapnel punctures to burns caused by the steam. And there were broken bones, like Theodore Milberger's leg. He was in a tree trying to get the perfect view of the staged wreck when the force of the explosion blew him out of the tree and left him with a broken leg. The iron and steel debris led to the death of three spectators. A large piece of iron hit the daughter of a local farmer named John Overstreet. He would later say she seemed okay, just shaken at first. But within 30 minutes, his daughter was dead. The family later learned the iron had fractured their daughter's skull. Two men were killed, including a teenager named Ernest Darnell. Ernest had climbed up into a mesquite tree for a better view of the event. Ernest was killed instantly when a hook that had been on a wrecking chain hit him in the head, just between the eyes, and split his skull. DeWitt Barnes had been standing between his wife and another woman when he collapsed. He had been hit and killed by a hot bolt that ripped through his body. While some spectators tried to help people who had been injured, others rushed toward that wreckage to grab debris, souvenirs from the tragic crash at Crush. One ironic casualty that was not a direct result of the explosion was a survivor being killed on the ride home from Crush, Texas. He had escaped injury but was killed on the train ride when he fell between cars on the train and was crushed by the caboose when it rolled over him. The wounded would be attended to and the dead taken to undertakers in nearby towns. But within hours of one of the greatest publicity stunt accidents in American history, the town of Crush, Texas, was dismantled. The grandstand and midway torn down and hauled away. The wreckage of the accident removed by Katy Railway that day the town of Crush, Texas, that had been the second largest in the state for a few hours, ceased to exist. The pain and horror of the crash at Crush lingered for the injured as the accident made national news, and questions were asked by reporters who dug in and learned from constables and witnesses that many of the wounded had pressed forward and were inside the roped-off safety zone at the time of the explosion. Crush had arranged for 200 constables to be deputized in Crush, Texas for the crash, but the constables reported attempts to push spectators back into the safe zone long before the event started. The crowd was so large, it was virtually impossible to prevent spectators from pushing forward. There just weren't enough constables to maintain order in a crowd that size. The big question, the one that's never been answered, is why the boilers exploded after they had been modified to prevent this kind of accident. Frank Barnes, a retired Katy engineer, was interviewed about the crash in 1950. He said the same thing other engineers and crew members said in the days following the accident, sharing the following. I still don't know what made those boilers explode. Everything was planned just right, and the crowd really got its money's worth. All of those safety precautions were taken, and nobody would have been hurt if the boilers hadn't gone off. Even then, they wouldn't have been hurt if they'd stayed behind the safety lines after the collision. The Katy Line faced wrongful death lawsuits and lawsuits from those who were injured as a result of the accident that went so horribly wrong. The company settled the lawsuits with lifetime rail passes, which were worth a significant amount of money, along with large cash payments, including a $10,000 settlement with photographer Jarvis Dean, who had lost an eye and remained in a coma for several months. Dean had a long road to recovery, but in 1898, when he was able to return to work, he posted this notice in Waco newspapers. Having gotten all the loose screws and other hardware out of my head, I am now ready for all the photographic business. Jarvis Dean remained in Waco, Texas, working as a photographer until 1901. As to the man who had proposed and planned the crash at Crush, William Crush was not fired. It's been reported through the years that he had been fired within an hour of things going sideways. But research by Mike Cox, a veteran Texas journalist and author of Train Crash at Crush, Texas, found that William Crush remained on the payroll and was never fired from the Katy Line. In fact, the Katy Line assigned Crush to handle the victims' claims from the disaster. William Crush returned to Dallas the day after the crash and spoke with the Dallas Morning News. The paper printed a statement from him on September 17, 1896, in which Crush spoke of his regret that there were injuries and death and defended his efforts and the efforts of constables to keep people behind the danger line. He said that it was impossible to do so, no matter how much he and the constables begged people to move back. As to what happened after the explosion, Crush wrote, "As soon as I discovered that several people had been hurt, I immediately took charge of the arrangements for their comfort, and everything has been done for them that medical skill can accomplish." He continued, "Barring a few minor details, everything was executed as intended, and I believe we had the largest crowd that ever assembled in this state. Of course, no one could have foreseen that the explosion of the boilers would occur. Every possible precaution had been taken to guard against such a contingency, and we believed that it was almost impossible. But in this, as in many other cases, plans miscarried to our very great regret." William Crush worked for the Katy Railway and rose through the ranks through high-level administrative positions until his retirement in 1940 at the age of 74. The Katy Line board viewed the national and international attention from the crash to work in their favor. They felt the company benefited financially from the accident with increased ticket sales. And to them, there was just no reason to get rid of Crush. The practice of staged train wrecks did not end with the tragedy at Crush, Texas. Instead, it spurred a new movement. Organizers chose to move forward with the practice for decades, including head-on Joe Connolly, who would say he was inspired to stage his wrecks after the crash at Crush. He just made them safer. Which was true. There was never a boiler explosion at a staged wreck following the crash at Crush, Texas. In a telling decision, as railway companies across the nation move forward with their staged train wrecks, the Katy Line never tried it again. After the tragedy, their insurance agents branded this practice as a liability insurance agent's nightmare. Ragtime composer and Texas native Scott Joplin was rumored to have been in the crowd at Crush, Texas, but that's never been confirmed. We do know he performed in the region around the time and, like all Americans, was shocked to hear what had happened. Joplin composed the Great Crush Collision March and dedicated it to the Katy Line in October 1896, less than a month after the tragic event. The music remains a standout because Joplin's piano march features sound effects that represent the train. Joplin's composition helped solidify the Great Crash at Crush in Texas history. Now, the crash at Crush, Texas did not stunt the Katy Line's growth in the decades that followed the accident. The whole thing seemed to be forgotten as Texans benefited from the expanded transportation options thanks to Katy Line's growth in the decades that followed. The railway expanded across the state, and by 1931, they earned more than $10 million. As the Texas Historical Commission has noted, the Katy opened a huge territory and contributed to the general well-being of its service area by supplying economical and reliable freight and passenger service. Crush, Texas had only existed for a few hours in September of 1896 and was packed up and hauled off, no longer existed, by sundown. Historian and former mayor of Waco, Texas, Roger Conger, did some exploring and research back in the 1970s, made countless trips out to the area north of Waco in an effort to find the exact spot of the former Crush, Texas. He told the Dallas Morning News that he had walked all over the area with a metal detector, digging up what he figured to be about 25 to 30 pounds of shrapnel from a field. That shrapnel was rusty metal fragments and remains of the boilers that had exploded and were buried a few inches in the soil on the day of the crash at Crush. Roger Conger was part of the group that helped post a historical marker in the middle of the field in 1976. A marker you'd most likely miss if you were driving through the area because it sits just off Interstate 35, south of West Texas, in a quiet and still pasture, not far from one of the biggest publicity stunt failures of all time. Texas humorist Alex Sweet was there on the day of that great failure at Crush, watching the whole thing from a distance. He joked he had seen enough that day to plan the next grand event Texans could enjoy. He suggested a, quote, prearranged schedule meeting between a waterspout and a tornado. Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. There are photos of the crash at Crush taken by Jarvis Dean and other photographers on hand for the big day. You can view those and more in the show notes at southernmysteries.com. I hope you'll help me spread the word about Southern Mysteries and help others discover the show by subscribing and rating and reviewing the show in your player. It really does help folks know that they should listen to Southern Mysteries like you do. This is an independent podcast, which means I spend countless hours researching, writing, producing, and hosting the show. And I do need your help to continue to create Southern Mysteries. You can become a member and support the show on Patreon. There you'll find a few membership options, including an option that gives you bonus content that you won't hear anywhere else. The great part of supporting the show on Patreon is that members get an exclusive RSS link that allows you to add your bonus content to your favorite podcast player, so you can keep listening to the show and the bonus content in the player you prefer. No downloading another app to listen on Patreon. Special thanks to our patrons, including our newest member, Connie S. Your support is greatly appreciated and ensures Southern Mysteries continues. You can find the link to join in supporting Southern Mysteries through Patreon in the show notes where you're listening now, or head to patreon.com/southernmysteries to join today. Thanks so much for listening.